As always, Vina, thank you very much. Real honor and privilege to be here, be introduced by you. So the topic of today is the self-directed Roth IRA success formula. And I got to make sure I give credit where credit's due. I didn't learn this all on my own. I didn't come up with it all on my own. I'm not the real architect or engineer behind this framework that I'm going to teach you today over the next 90 minutes in the success formula. A lot of it has to do with a lot of the folks that are part of this convention every single year. So individuals like Peter Fortunato, Dykes Botiford, Vina, of course, John Heyer, I've learned from some of the greatest minds in the self-directed IRA space. My mentor was a gentleman by the name of Dick Desich. Does anyone know or has anyone ever met Dick Desich? So he's widely known as the pioneer of the self-directed IRA industry. And he started a predecessor to Equity Trust Company, now Equity Trust. At that time, it was under a different name, back in 1974. Well, IRAs were not legislated. None of this was even possible until 1974. In 1974, there was what was called the ERISA Act, the Employee Retirement Income Securities Act. And before the ERISA Act, you didn't have the ability to use a retirement account in a tax-free capacity to invest in real estate. And so Mr. Desich started the company, and then in the early 80s, he put together one of the very first real estate transactions. It was actually a commercial real estate syndication. And about 22 IRA investors were involved in this transaction. They each invested about $6,000. And over the course of about 19 years on a triple net lease, that commercial real estate threw off nearly $200,000 in profit, tax deferred, to these individual investors. And that was in the early 80s. It was one of the very first self-directed IRA transactions. And then since then, he's grown the business to over 200,000 customers and over $42 billion in assets under custody and administration. And I had the unique privilege of coming to Equity Trust 15 years ago. I was working for a real estate company, and I went to the founders of this company, and I said, hey, why don't you have IRAs or 401ks or other retirement plans? And they were in their 50s and 70s, 80s. And they said, well, we don't believe in IRAs and 401ks because we don't believe in the stock market. Who's felt that way before or heard that before? I don't believe in IRAs because I don't believe in the stock market. What Mr. Desich taught me 15 years ago is that you could buy a rental property with your self-directed IRA funds. If I went and worked for a company for years and had a 401k, I can roll it over into a self-directed IRA and buy a rental property. I could do a fix and flip transaction. I could do private money lending. And as we're going to talk about in today's program, we're going to go through some interesting, I will consider slightly more advanced, but still simple transactions. Transactions that don't require hundreds of thousands of dollars in a retirement plan. When I started 15 years ago, I didn't start with hundreds of thousands of dollars in a Roth IRA or HSA or other self-directed account. One of the very first transactions that I did was a private money loan with $23,000. That's all I had in a self-directed account. And what I learned from a lot of the people that congregate every single year at this convention is that there are other ways that I can accelerate the growth of my retirement plan, of my Roth IRA. So I started utilizing these strategies and I started teaching these strategies. I also have a unique privilege of working for Equity Trust, and I've been doing it for 15 years, and I have the unique privilege to be able to work hand in hand with clients that are investing in real estate, and I get to see the real documentation. See, when you transact with your self-directed IRA through Equity Trust, and some of you know this because you're clients of ours, I know Ed here knows this, you have to send us all of your supporting documents for your investment. So I get to see those documents. I get to read them, review them, understand them. I get to talk to the individuals and help them through their transactions and troubleshoot problems they have. And that's given me the opportunity to acquire all of this knowledge at a pretty accelerated pace, be able to use it for the benefit of myself and my wife so we can leverage compounding interest in the absence of taxation. But wouldn't I want to share that with everybody? Of course. So I share that with everyone I can, and I've had the opportunity to share it with over 60,000 folks over the last 15 years. And one of the transactions in particular, a small dollar Roth IRA transaction, started about 4 years ago. There was two gentlemen here that come to this convention every single year, and I'm not going to mention their names. I'm just going to call them Investor A and Investor B. And Investor A only had about $13,000 and some change in his Roth IRA. So who has had the challenge of maybe only having a small amount of money in a Roth IRA because you just got started, or because maybe you have other deals in there and you only have a little bit of cash? Or it could be an HSA, or it could be a covered education savings account. We'll talk about that. And so this gentleman's challenge was he only had a small amount of money. But there are hundreds of, now at this convention, thousands of what we call financial friends that are amongst us, right? And so this gentleman, Investor A, took his $13,000 and some change in his Roth IRA. He partnered up with another investor at this convention. They did a fix and flip transaction. And Investor A, with only $13,000 and some change, ended up making a $34,000 tax-free profit. And that all went back into his Roth IRA. And how much did he pay in taxes? Zero. How much will he ever pay in taxes as long as he follows the rules? Zero. He leaves it to his children or grandchildren. How much are they going to pay in taxes? 0%. Now, I'm going to break that down for you in much more detail in a little bit here, but that's one of the many things that I'm going to teach you over the next, we have about probably 65 more minutes. Everybody good with that?
Yes.
All right. Very quickly, important to understand that this is for educational purposes only. If you've seen me speak before, you've seen this disclaimer many, many times. Equity Trust is a directed custodian. What that means is we allow you to direct your funds. Now, most financial institutions, by show of hands, who has never heard of this concept of self-directing with a custodian? Is there anyone out there? Okay. So very quickly, if you have an IRA or retirement plan at another financial institution, are they going to allow you to invest in real estate? Most likely no. Why? Because most of them don't have the incentive to do so. You go to your financial advisor, your financial planner, not that they're bad people or they're misguiding you, but they likely don't have the financial incentive to teach you about what we're talking about, right? They have the financial incentive to sell you what? Stocks, mutual funds, traditional assets. By the way, I know there are only a couple hands that went up when I asked if they knew about self-directed IRAs. Why else would everybody else in the room that already knows about self-directed IRAs want to understand some of those concepts about why, when you go to a financial advisor or financial planner, that they might not be willing to share this type of information or may even put up roadblocks to prevent a person from moving their money to a self-directed IRA with Equity Trust to invest in real estate? Well, yes, they get commissions, but why would you want to know this? So when you're out teaching other investors, financial friends that we're going to talk about, right, you can educate those people because those are your folks that are going to be your private lenders, that are going to be your deal partners, right? So everybody in this room, in order to make this formula work, you're going to want to make sure you understand these basics and these concepts and you have ammunition to be able to go out and talk to financial friends and share the wisdom that you're obtaining so that you can have a better experience and give them a better experience of using their IRA money alongside you. Make sense? Okay. So again, Equity Trust is a directed custodian. I'm not here to provide tax, legal, or financial advice. And now everybody can say they've read this from the very top to the very bottom, right? For those who have never seen me speak before, those that have been here many times, they know I have an incredibly dry sense of humor. I spend most of my time in Internal Revenue Code 4975, the various publications. I have a certification through the American Bankers Association where I know a lot about IRAs. So if I tell a really bad joke, just laugh at me, okay? I'm not really that great at that. Okay, so there are different account types. We're not going to go through every account type and deal because we want to get into the investments and the formula and the structure. But we're going to really focus heavy on the Roth IRA. Every man, woman, and child in the United States can qualify for a Roth IRA. Now, right now, not everybody does, but everybody can, and that's what's important. I'm going to teach you how, even if you think you don't qualify for a Roth IRA, or even how you might think a child doesn't qualify for a Roth IRA, how you can. And I'm a true believer that every man, woman, and child in this country should have a Roth IRA. By the way, write down this date, July 22nd. July 22nd, very important date. It's not because it's my father's birthday. It's because it's William Roth Jr.'s birthday. William Roth Jr.'s birthday. You didn't really have to write that down, by the way. William Roth Jr. Legislated, took him nine times, legislated the Roth IRA into existence in 1997. It was passed, went into effect in 1998. Well, the problem was, is at that time, and still to this day, they say, well, if you make too much money, you can't contribute to a Roth IRA. Who's been told that you can't qualify or contribute to a Roth IRA? It's nonsense. What you're going to learn is you can do what's called a backdoor Roth IRA. You can contribute first to a traditional IRA and then immediately convert over to a Roth IRA. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands that everybody can qualify for a Roth IRA, and it's very easy to establish and fund. Now, don't get the Roth IRA confused with a solo 401k with a Roth component. That's a totally different account type and structure. Some may or may not qualify, but we can certainly talk to you more about those details. Now, don't underestimate the traditional IRA. See, Roth IRAs grow tax-free. You put money in, it's after tax, it grows tax-free, you take the money out, you pay no tax. A traditional IRA is the opposite. When you put money in, you get a tax deduction, you grow it tax-deferred, and then when you take the money out, you have to pay taxes. Don't underestimate it, because from a compounding interest perspective, the traditional IRA can still be powerful. So if you have a 401k from an old job, a 403b, a thrift savings plan, you're maybe a federal government employee, or a FERS, a Federal Employee Retirement Systems account, if you have an employer-sponsored plan or other tax-deferred account, maybe a SEP IRA or simple IRA, you can simply move that over into a self-directed IRA. You still have the benefits of compounding interest. And you'll also learn how you could convert that to a Roth IRA. So towards the end of this class, I will show you how that works. You also have what's called an inherited IRA. Does anyone have an inherited IRA that they inherited? You can self-direct an inherited IRA. A lot of people don't realize that. SEP IRA, simple IRA, solo 401k, those are for business owners. I call them solopreneurs. So if you're self-employed and you are generating income in your business, and when I say income, I should say income that you are then passing through and paying Medicare and Social Security tax on. We call that earned income. If you have earned income as a self-employed individual, you can look at one of these self-employed retirement plans, like a SEP, simple, or solo 401k. Now, I will pause for a moment and mention that you have to be careful with a lot of sort of the hype that's out there about solo 401ks. They're very powerful. They have a lot of interesting characteristics and benefits that we can talk about, but you have to qualify. You have to have a business that has producing income that you are then passing through and paying yourself earned income. If all of your income is passive income, you can't even open up one of these accounts, unfortunately. Now, could you structure your business in maybe a little different way in order to produce earned income and then qualify? Of course, there are strategies around that. But I just want to be very careful on that, because I have seen folks out there that sell solo 401ks, and I am using sell solo 401ks pretty passionately here. So you give them $4,000 to $5,000, they give you a plan document and never talk to you again. And they never do any of the qualifications in terms of whether you qualify or not. I meet investors every single weekend at conventions that say, oh, I opened a solo 401k and they've never had earned income. Well, according to the IRS guidance, and this is on the IRS website, irs.gov, it clearly says that you can't have a solo 401k, it's ineligible. But remember, some of these companies out there, they're not regulated. They don't have certifications to the American Bankers Association. They aren't regulated by the South Dakota Division of Banking. So I just wanted to take a couple minutes there and mention that you really need to make sure that you're following these rules, and you really got to make sure you're getting information from the right source. Last but not least, what about a health savings account or a covered education savings account? I'm going to show you a couple examples. One, a wrap loan. Has anyone heard of a wrap loan? I know, Ed, awesome. A lot of folks. You do wrap lending with a self-directed IRA. In fact, Ed, I don't think I mentioned this to you, but I got to give you credit. Ed was doing so many wrap deals that the company actually asked me, Equity Trust, to put out a training for the entire service organization around how wrap loans work. So that way, we could be more efficient. We could be more efficient about how we process these transactions to make it easy for you guys. So again, big round of applause for Ed. Thank you. And the Coverdell Education Savings Account. I'm going to show you an example of how you can leverage. You can use private money or a hard money lender. You can borrow money to acquire real estate with the Coverdell account or any of the accounts. So in conclusion to this slide, just really important to understand that you can self-direct any of these accounts, all in the same way. All the strategies that I'm talking about today can be used universally across all these accounts. Now, is it just a Roth IRA? Could you have multiple accounts? Of course you can. You can populate those accounts with different sources of money. Some are tax deferred, some are tax free. And my team and I can help you through that process so you can understand that. You can understand what you qualify for, what maybe you don't qualify for, how much you can put in there, so on and so forth. All right, so now we want to jump into the formula, jump into the examples and case studies. Now first, you need to understand the four methods to finance investments. Now, this could be properties, or it could be structured as a note deal. So you're going to see two different examples. You're going to see examples of where I own property directly or through an entity, and then on the other side, paper transactions, where my self-directed accounts or our client's self-directed accounts are in a note transaction. Okay, two different sort of structures, but important to understand that. But it starts here with these four methods to finance investments. The first is where your IRA can go out and be a cash buyer on a deal. Your IRA funds the property purchase, your IRA funds all the purchase and rehab, and then all your profits go back into the self-directed IRA. Now, can you take the money personally? No, it's got to go back in the IRA because the IRA is tax privileged. Remember, you're avoiding, if structured properly, short-term capital gains tax, long-term capital gains tax, ordinary income taxes. So if you make a promissory note, you make a loan, or you have rental income, you're mitigating that tax liability. You're growing either tax deferred or tax free. You're either paying taxes on the seed or on the crop. So it's important to understand that when the income flows back in, that it's not subject to tax, so as long as you're following the rules appropriately. Now, I'm not going to spend any more time on this because you're here to learn about, hey, how can I get creative and use a smaller amount of money? How am I going to buy a $150,000 rental property when I've never had an IRA before and I can only contribute up to $7,500 this year, right? There's going to be a problem there. So that's where we're going to go into the second and third, which are the most impactful for today's class. The first you're going to want to write down, number two here, is partnering with certain family members or non-IRA money. So you're going to want to write down here disqualified persons. So under Internal Revenue Code 4975, the tax code specifically states who disqualified persons are to your IRA. All right, so number two, partnering with certain family members or non-IRA money, disqualified persons. Write that down. Then we move to number three, which is partnering with non-disqualified persons. And I want you to write down under number three, financial friends. Financial friends. Financial friends are a key component to this formula. Disqualified persons to your IRA. Who are those individuals? Let's talk about that for a moment. Disqualified persons are going to include, again, this is 4975 of the tax code. Disqualified persons are going to include yourself to your IRA, your spouse, your children and grandchildren. Under the tax code provisions, they call these lineal descendants. I never really understood that, to be honest with you. As you know, the tax code is usually written in alien terms, so then we have to interpret it. Lineal, that was one of those jokes, bad, laugh, okay. Lineal ascendants. Lineal ascendants would be your parents and grandparents. And then any entity like your limited liability companies, your S corporations, your corps, any entity or also could be trust or partnership that is owned 50% or greater by those disqualified persons. That was a mouthful. Here's what I'll tell you. Your businesses, your LLCs, your trust, your rev trust, your estate planning trust, all of that, your land trust, your personal property trust, all of those, your partnerships, those are all disqualified persons to your IRA. Okay? Now, it's not bad, because what you're going to learn is there are ways to do deals with disqualified persons, but you have to do it the right way. Now, what's interesting is brothers, sisters, cousins, uncles, nieces, nephews, so people across the family tree, are not considered disqualified persons to your IRA. All right, so just remember that up and down the family tree, your spouse, your businesses, those are disqualified persons. So usually when I ask people at some of our longer classes, okay, how many disqualified persons do you have associated with you? And sometimes I'll get five or six, sometimes I'll get, you know, in the teens, but usually it's not, for most people, it's not more than 20, unless somebody has like 30 kids, right? And maybe a lot of grandchildren. But usually that's the extent of it. So how many millions of Americans are in the United States? Like 360 million. There's a lot more financial friends out there than there are disqualified persons. And that's really, really important because this formula works when partnering with financial friends. That is to really accelerate the growth of your IRA. All right, last but not least is your IRA borrowing money. Yes, your IRA can borrow money. Usually I get the question, can my IRA be used as a down payment to buy a property? Of course it can. But the loan, the IRA borrowing the money, that loan must be what's called a non-recourse loan. Basically what that means is in the event of a default, the only recourse that the lender has is against the subject property. The reason why this is because under 4975 C1, it's actually C1B of the tax code, it clearly states that your credit can't be used to obtain financing because you're a disqualified person. What does that mean in real terms? You can't sign a personal guarantee. Here's the problem. When you go to most banks, lenders, and you borrow money, what do they ask for? They ask for a personal guarantee, right? Your IRA, when borrowing money, you can't sign a personal guarantee. Now, are there non-recourse lenders out there? There are. Now, if you're going to do a rental property, you can go to a bank like North American Savings Bank or First Western Savings. I can give you those resources if you want. But a lot of people are looking to do maybe a fix and flip transaction or maybe a transaction where the lender is funding the purchase and then maybe the IRA has enough for rehab. So that's where you're going to need to go to the private money lending marketplace or maybe a hard money lender. And when you're working with those entities and persons, you just have to make sure that they understand that they cannot ask you to sign a personal guarantee. Everybody with me on that? Okay, so those are the four methods. Now, here's the formula to write down. All right? You got to have your account, right? Roth IRA, HSA, CISA. Now, it could be a traditional, could be a solo, could be a SEP or simple. I'm just putting Roth, HSA, and CISA because these are the pure tax-free accounts, right? We have the ability to leverage compounding interest in the absence of taxation. So if you don't already have an account open, that's an easy process. That's exactly what myself and my team does. In fact, two of our IRA counselors are here this weekend. So if you don't have your account set up yet, okay, you need help with that, you can come see us and we can help you through that process. All right, so that's done. That's the easy part, right? You have that. Then the second is you have to have a deal or an opportunity, right? Which means you have to go out and find the deal or find the opportunity. That's a really key component of this formula, is you finding the deal or opportunity. Because if you're not finding the deal or the opportunity, what value are you really adding? I just have to be honest, right? It's the way the formula works. We have to go out and we have to hustle and find these opportunities and bring these opportunities back to the farm, and then we bring our financial friends into the mix. And that's what makes this all work. You'll see that in the examples in just a moment. All right, and then the last component of this is your financial friend. How many millions of financial friends do we have out here? Like, right, 360 million. In fact, one of the examples, Bob, who is part of this group and organization, he does wrap lending. You're going to see an HSA example. His financial friend in the transaction was his neighbor. He went to his neighbor. His neighbor was complaining about how he was losing money in the stock market. How many times have you heard that from people, right? Complaining about their financial advisor, people in their, that they're losing money, right? And he said, well, would you be interested in some real estate deals that can potentially generate X amount of return? Yes. And he put the deal together. All right, you're going to see that in just a moment. All right, first, let me show you some examples of what about partnering with yourself or your family members? Now, usually when I start going down this path, and they're like, well, wait a second, John, you said you're a disqualified person to your IRA, right? Didn't I say that? But now I'm about to show you a deal where I partnered with my non-IRA money and I partnered my traditional and Roth in the same transaction. You're probably thinking, how in the world does that work? How is that not a prohibited transaction? That's what it's called, prohibited transaction. That's a lot of fun reading in Internal Revenue Code 4975, by the way, publication 590. I'm going to be doing a seminar later tonight. It starts at 10 o'clock. Oh. I'm just kidding. No one would come to that, right? The reason why this works, you're going to see, is because the profits and the expenses, I'm going to make sure flow in the appropriate fashion. All right, let's break this down. I bought this house in March of 2020. There's an upstairs and downstairs unit generating $750 a month in rent. The seller was a landlord who had about 9 properties left. They were trying to get out of the business. The property had about $15,000 in deferred maintenance that I was able to estimate. And there were tenant issues. Basically, the property, there was poor property management in place. At the end of the day, that's what it was. How many people have seen deals like this before, right? Right? All day, every day, we see deals like this. This is in Maple Heights, Ohio, by the way, because I'm up in Cleveland. That's where our headquarters is at, right outside of Cleveland in a city called Westlake. So I bought this property for $63,000 from a motivated seller. And the way I structured it is I had my Roth IRA as a 55% owner, my traditional IRA as a 35% owner, and my LLC, my non-IRA money, as a 10% owner. Now, why didn't I fund the entire deal with my Roth account? I didn't have enough money in the Roth account. I don't have endless amounts of money in my Roth accounts. I wish I did. Otherwise, I would have done it all with my Roth account. Right? A lot of people face this. Who's faced this before or knows they're going to face this, right? And if you haven't faced it yet, it's going to happen, right? Because when you have investments in your IRAs, as you start to grow and build and have more investments in your IRAs, but only a little bit of cash, and you want to do a deal, right? You're going to encounter this same problem. That's exactly what happened to me here. I had other private money loans and properties. I didn't have enough to be able to fund it all with my Roth IRA. So I brought in my Roth, my traditional, and some non-IRA money, 55, 35, 10%. Bought it for 63. At closing, equity trust wired 55, 35, and 10%. The 10% came from my bank account. Didn't have to come from the equity trust accounts, right? And so we did have it cash flowing over the 2 years while we were paying for a lot of the deferred maintenance. So we had some work done on the property, minor improvements, mostly repairs. And while it was cash flowing, we had to make sure that the cash flow flowed back in 55, 35, 10. And then all of our expenses were paid out 55, 35, and 10. I call this a buy, rent, flip. So we like to find opportunities like this, especially for our self-directed IRAs, where we buy, we take care of the deferred maintenance, and then we sell, we make our profit, and then we take that money and we put it into private money lending and other deals. That's the way we like to grow our self-directed IRAs, my wife and I. Now, separate from that, we have rental properties that are much longer-term holds that we do outside of our IRA. So I always like to mention to people that it makes sense to do deals inside your IRA and outside of your IRA, right? It's not a one or the other. We're not competing here. It's a rising tide. Really important to understand that. A lot of people will kind of get caught up into the tunnel vision of, oh, I got to do everything with my IRA. That's not the case. And so that's the way we approach, my wife and I approach the business, is we're growing our IRAs as much as we can, saving taxes, right? Compounding interest in the absence of taxation, and then we have deals over here. So 2 years later, we sold the property. This was May of 2022, last year. Sold it for $115,000 to an out-of-state buyer. Out-of-state buyer, people from California, people from Boise, Idaho, people from Austin, Texas, they love real estate in these markets, right? Who knows that? Who's seen that? They love real estate in this market. So really easy to offload deals like this. Sold the property, now made a nearly $39,000 profit. That includes the capital gains. And that $38,000 in profit, that had to be split 55, 35, and 10, right? So I couldn't take all my profit and put it back into my Roth. Do you think the IRS would be okay with that? No. It'd be a prohibited transaction. My entire IRA would cease to exist. So I had to make sure it was split 55, 35, 10. Now, $35,000 of that profit went back to my traditional and Roth. Did I pay taxes? Did I pay capital gains on that $35,000? No. No capital gains. I didn't even have to report that $35,000. Now, I did have to report the difference because I personally had some equity in the deal. So the $35,000 in capital gains, had I had to pay capital gains tax, I would have had to pay about $5,000 in taxes. So in other words, I saved $5,000 in taxes. Now here's one thing that I regret on this deal. It was a good deal, made some nice capital in our retirement accounts. But where I regret is at this time, my wife actually had enough money in her Roth IRA to fund this portion. We actually probably could have done it with our HSA too. And instead, I tried to move too fast on the deal and I ended up parking 10% of my own money in there. So when we filed our tax return last year, I had to pay the capital gains tax. So that's my real only regret on this transaction. But I show you this because it is a good example of how you can partner your IRA funds with your non-IRA funds. You just have to make sure everything is done proportionally, precisely, right, proportionally. So just remember that. You can partner with disqualified persons. You just got to make sure everything is done proportionally. I even had a client that, this is a loan transaction, not a property investment, where he had 10 IRAs and investment accounts all in one transaction. He made a loan to a mobile home park operator on an equity participation basis. I'll actually show you one of those examples in a few moments too. He had all 10 accounts in one transaction. He had his Roth, his solo, he had an HSA, he had his children's CISA and Roth IRAs. He had all 10 accounts making a loan on one transaction, and then all of those accounts received a percentage of the profits that was proportionate with the capital contribution. So you can get really, really creative in terms of the number of accounts that you bring into a deal. Okay, now let's depart from partnering with ourselves, our spouses, other disqualified persons, and partnering with a financial friend, because this is really where the formula to accelerate profitability and wealth in a Roth IRA comes into play. So here's the example that I referenced at the very beginning. Investor A and Investor B. Investor A had a Roth IRA with $13,000 and some change. Investor B had a traditional in Roth. Now, Investor B, let's call Investor B the money partner. He's the financial friend. Investor A, he's the one out making the deal. He's the one that went out and found the opportunity. Investor A partnered with Investor B. They acquired this property. The purchase and rehab was about $105,000. It was about a 9-month transaction. They had a joint venture agreement. So it wasn't an LLC. They actually took title to the property as tenants and common owners. Both of their accounts were listed on the deed to the property. That's important. Both accounts were listed on the deed to the property. Equity trust company custodian for the benefit of each of the individuals' IRAs and their percentages. And then separate from that, they had a real estate joint venture agreement. In fact, I'm going to give you a copy. Everybody that came today is going to get a copy of a joint venture agreement that I've seen used for self-directed IRAs. We have this in what we call the Master Transaction Handbook. By coming here this morning, everybody's going to get a copy of that digitally. So this joint venture agreement spelled out that 50% of the profits go back to Investor A and 50% go back to Investor B. So when it was all said and done, Investor A, 50% of the $68,000 ends up being $34,000 and some change. So his Roth IRA grows from $13,000 to over $47,000, and how much does he pay in tax? 0%. Going forward, when he starts harvesting from the Roth IRA after 59.5, how much does he pay in tax? 0%. He passes away and leaves it to his children or grandchildren. How much do they pay in tax? 0%. Investor B here, he's happy because he makes $34,000. He's made over a 35% cash-on-cash return in 9 months. They structured it as a joint venture. Investor B didn't make a loan to Investor A. Does anyone know why Investor B, why they structured it where Investor B did not make a loan to Investor A? When your IRA, I'm going to show it to you in just a few moments, when your IRA, CISA, HSA borrows money to acquire real estate, you have what's called unrelated business income tax, UBIT. Sometimes you'll hear it in the industry referred to as unrelated debt financed income tax. It's not a negative. You're going to see that in a few moments. But there are ways that you can be creative and you can mitigate this to a degree. And this is one example. For those of you that are like, what is he talking about? What are these acronyms? Section 511 to 514, I know you're going to go home later tonight and check that out. Let me give you the skinny version. When your IRA borrows money, your IRA has to pay tax on the net profits attributable to the debt finance percentage. So if you bought a property for $100,000 and borrowed $50,000, you're at 50% leverage. The IRS is going to say, well, you have to pay taxes on 50% of the net profit, called unrelated business income tax. Now, you're going to see sometimes it benefits one to pay this tax because of the tax-free profits that you can accumulate in that IRA, even beyond that UBIT tax. So don't be afraid of it, just understand it. In fact, I encourage people to embrace it because it can be very powerful. If we're paying taxes, that means what? We're making money, right? All right, so that's investor A and investor B. Now, does investor B, did they have to use their IRA? No. It could have been non-IRA money, so maybe your neighbor doesn't have any IRA money, right? Maybe your neighbor is one of those people that doesn't believe in the stock market, so doesn't believe in IRAs. How many 360 million Americans out there know nothing about self-directed IRA investing? Most of them, right? So this is where some of this information can help you in training other people, your potential financial friends. All right, what about purchasing with financing? Let me show you an example of that. This one is a covered education savings account, CESA account for short. He's become a good friend of mine over the years. His name is Lee. Daughter was 17 years old. This transaction was actually just closed earlier this year. So last year, his daughter was 17. And what you'll learn with a covered education savings account, does anyone know how much money you can put into a covered L account in 1 year? $2,000. You can only put $2,000 in. I've been in the business for 15 years. You can only put $2,000 in. I've been writing to our senators and congressmen and women for many, many years about this. I get things back about like Social Security and totally non-relevant things. That was an attempt at a political joke. It did not land well. I don't like the rules either, but the reality is you can only put $2,000 in, okay? But as an investor, we can be creative, right? We can organically create profitability in there, and that's exactly what Lee did. Now, what you'll learn with a covered education savings account is you cannot contribute after the age of 18. But his daughter was 17, going away to college. He knew it was going to cost him a fortune to pay for her college, right? And he wanted to find out, how can I do this and not have to pay a lot of money in taxes? So what he did is he set up a Coverdell account, put $2,000 into it. Very easy to do. It was actually only a $70 fee in the first year. Then what he does is he finds a deal. Now, he does fix and flip deals right outside of, like, Coeur d'Alene is where his market is in Spokane, Washington. So he finds a deal, fix and flip opportunity. The CESA account, the covered education savings account, makes an offer on the property. Now, Lee is in control of the Coverdell account, okay? So he's signing the purchase contract, he's negotiating, he's making the offer, all that. The Coverdell account is on title. So it says Equity Trust Company Custodian, FBO, his daughter's account number, CESA. So you're going to learn for anonymity purposes, when you acquire real estate or make loans, you can use your account number, IRA, or account number, CESA, like in this example. And he signs on behalf of the CESA account. So the buyer is that titling that I mentioned. And the CESA account puts down a $500 deposit. So he logs into his My Equity portal through his Equity Trust account, requests a $500 deposit. Deposit goes out the door. Now, he had an inspection fee and some other costs. All in, his Coverdell Education Savings Account for his daughter only put in $1,489.23. That was it. So where did the remaining amount? He needed $190,000 for the purchase and rehab. $150,000 purchase, $40,000 in rehab. So where did the $190,000 come from? It came from two lenders. So we had a primary lender on a first that did a purchase money mortgage for the $150,000 to acquire. So the CESA account borrowed the $150,000 to buy the property. Closing occurred. Then separately, he had a $40,000 loan from a, let's call it, private lender. Okay, and that was on a draw. So as the rehab was being performed, more money was being dripped into the CESA account to pay for expenses. All in, the CESA account had about $17,100 in loan fees and interest. Now, of course, there's $190,000 in debt, so that $190,000 has to be paid off at the time of selling the property. Within about 9 months, the house is renovated and sold. He had a return of capital at $251,975.82. He had to pay off the $190,000 loan. There were two separate loans, $150,000 and $40,000, plus the interest, which left him a total profit of $44,875.82. Now, does he get to keep that entire $44,875.82 tax-free? No, he doesn't. By the way, a Coverdell account, functions just like a Roth IRA. The money goes in after tax, it grows tax-free when you take it out, so as long as you use it for K through 12 education or college tuition, it's tax-free. So think of it like a Roth for education. 44,875.82, but he has to pay this tax, this UBIT tax. Now, with only about $1,400 into the deal, with financing of $190, he's nearly 100% leveraged, right? So nearly 100% of his profits, when he files what's called a 990T tax return, is going to be subject to this tax, this unrelated business income tax. And that's going to end up being, when I did the math, about $16,600. So his covered education savings account is going to write a check to the IRS for about $16,600. Now, is that painful? Yeah. I mean, the check itself leaving the account is a little bit painful. But let's look at the pleasure side of this, right? We got 16. I don't know where I was going with that, but I was waiting for someone to call me out. Like, what is this guy talking about? So when it's all said and done, he's got after-tax profit of $28,000. $28,000. How much is his daughter's college going to cost him on an annual basis? $15,000 to $20,000. So Lee's goal is to do this every single year for the next 4 years. Because if he does this every year for the next 4 years, his daughter's college is going to be paid for with tax-free dollars, right? You guys with me on that? So $28,000 goes back into the CESA tax-free. That's called a 1,900% cash-on-cash return. So this is a good example of where it can benefit you to borrow money and actually pay some tax. Now, last but not least, let me mention that a solo 401k, if and only if you qualify, does have an exemption of unrelated business income tax as it relates to debt-financed real estate transactions like this. Now, remember, not everybody qualifies for a solo 401k, but if you do and you do a transaction like this, you could potentially be exempt from unrelated business income tax, which is kind of an interesting characteristic to the solo. But if you don't qualify, pay the tax, but reap the reward of the tax-free profits in there. Yeah, quick question. I'll take one. Yes. No, so it cannot be a recourse loan. So you, Lee, as the responsible individual of the CESA, or if it was an IRA, as the account owner of the IRA, cannot sign a personal guarantee. Private lender. 150 and then 40 for the rehab, separate loan. So two loans, first and a second. Yep.
John,
good question.
What does EMD stand for?
Oh, earnest money deposit. My apologies on the acronyms. UBIT, UDFI, people are like, oh, geez. Okay, now let's depart from property ownership. Okay, we've been talking a lot about owning properties directly, and let's move into more private loans, more paper transactions. There's a lot of power behind this. So what was the formula again? The formula, first part of the formula is what? Your account, right? Roth, CESA, HSA, whatever type of account. The second part of the formula is what? A deal or opportunity. And then the third part of the formula is what?
Financial
friend. Right. Same formula in these examples. So first example for you, Alec. Alec's a gentleman I actually just met recently at a conference, a family office conference out in California. And Alec comes up to me and says, hey, John, I wanted to share with you. I really appreciate everything that you guys do. I started with Equity Trust in 2015 with a Roth, 2 years of Roth IRA contributions. He only had about $11,000 in his Roth IRA. He now has over $1 million in his Roth IRA that he's accumulated. He's done a number of interesting transactions. Some of them were real estate related. Some of them were in the venture capital startup space. Okay, so it wasn't just real estate, but I wanna show you his first two transactions that really helped him jumpstart his Roth IRA. Deal number one. He only had $11,000 in his Roth IRA. He found a deal. He found a vacant lot. This is out in California. And he was working with the seller. It was a motivated seller transaction. He was working with the seller. He took the deal and brought the deal to a financial friend. Call that financial friend an operator, somebody that was in the business, somebody that he knew well, somebody that he'd done business with in the past. And he knew that operator could come in and acquire the property and then eventually sell the property. So Alec said to his financial friend, hey, I want to be part of the deal, but I'm not going to wholesale the deal. I'm not going to do an option. I'm not going to be part of the deal. I want to be a lender on the deal. So the way Alec structured it is he brought the deal to the financial friend. The financial friend is the one that acquired the property, closed, took title, was on the deed. Alec's Roth IRA made an $8,000 loan. You see this note secured by a deed of trust. Again, this is in California, okay? So here in Ohio, we call it a mortgage. He had a note and a deed of trust. The note specifically laid out the $8,000 loan, and you see there, Equity Trust Company Custodian FBO Alec's IRA. The $8,000 loan had a 12% interest on it, but 12% of $8,000 is only $80. You guys would laugh me out of here, right, if I was showing you an example of only making $80. Well, remember, Alec's the one that found the deal and brought it to the financial friend. So in addition to the 12%, Alec also charged, might be a little hard to see for those that are in the back, but here you see an exit fee of $32,000 and some change is due at the end of the term or sale of the property, whichever comes sooner. So Alec was able to command just over a $32,000 exit fee. That $32,000 exit fee went back into his Roth IRA. This deal was bought and sold in about 3 months. So in about a 3 months' time, Alec had his $8,000 returned to his Roth, plus the $32,000 and some change, plus the $80 in interest. And how much did he pay in taxes? 0%. These are the actual documents that he used in the transaction. All right, now deal number two. Everybody with me on that? All right, deal number two, very similar transaction. Same financial friend, by the way. Different deal. Different seller, motivated seller. Alec brings the deal to the financial friend. In this case, Alec now has more money in his Roth IRA. So Alec loans $53,000 to the borrower, charging 12%. Now, 12% isn't much to write home about on $53,000. He also charges an exit fee, you see here, of $43,000. So that exit fee goes where upon the sale of the property? Goes back to his Roth IRA. Does the Roth IRA pay tax on that? No, it's tax-free in the Roth IRA. So now he's got $44,000, nearly $45,000 tax-free in his Roth. So over the course of two deals, he's now got about $100,000 in his Roth IRA. And then he just kept compounding year over year to now he has over $1 million in his Roth IRA. What about an equity participation loan? It doesn't have to be vacant land, residential, single family, apartment buildings. What about self-storage? So a good friend of mine that I met about 10 years ago, who's a self-directed IRA investor, his name is Scott, and he's in the self-storage business. Now, he's not buying 500-unit self-storage buildings, okay? He's buying, you know, 40, 45-unit self-storage buildings in more rural areas around Indiana, some in Ohio here, all the way down to Mississippi. And what Scott's really good at is finding opportunities. He's really good at working with motivating sellers and negotiating deals. And he understands the concept of growing a Roth IRA tax-free, and he's very passionate about it. Scott just turned 59 and a half. So now he's even more enthusiastic about this because he's got a Roth IRA that he's already had for more than 5 years. It's already seasoned, which means he can make deals, make profit, and then turn around and take it out of the Roth and pay how much in tax? 0%. So Scott finds an opportunity. It's a self-storage building, and he has a network of operators who know how to take down these deals. They know how to manage the renovations. They know how to put in systems. They know how to put in client service components of self-storage, add value, and then they usually exit those deals in like a year and a half to 2 years. So they're basically flipping self-storage buildings is what they're doing. So Scott finds these opportunities from these motivated sellers, starts to negotiate the deal, and then he brings the deal to a financial friend, okay? Scott, he doesn't want to have equity in the deal, and there's a number of reasons why. One of it is because of UBIT. Scott just wants to be a lender on the deal. So Scott structures these equity participation loans. Has anyone ever done an equity participation loan or have heard of it? Equity participation loan. What this means is that the IRA is receiving a percentage of the profits. Not just an interest rate, but a percentage of the profits. So here's how this deal worked out. This is the actual note and mortgage. Scott's Roth IRA loaned $50,000, and Scott's Roth IRA received 12% of the net operating income per year, and then 12% of the net profits upon the sale of the property. So remember, this is a self-storage building. So self-storage, apartment buildings, right? We look at net operating income. So he was able to negotiate with the financial friend that he would get 12% of the net operating income. Could you do that on a rental property? Why not? Could you do it on an apartment building? Why not? I'm even looking at how I could possibly do this on the heavy equipment, like skid steers and backhoes and things like that. So we talk a lot about real estate, but why couldn't you do it with other types of assets? I don't see why not. So back to real estate in this example. He's got 12% coming back in. Now, this was a fairly in and out transaction, about a year and a half. The total profit was $56,000 and some change. So $50,000 out, $50,000 principal back. Then he's got his $56,000 and some change tax-free, over a 56% annualized cash-on-cash return on investment. So that's just one transaction. Now, what about a spouse's Roth? So one of the things you'll learn is you have your Roth IRA. You can make contributions to your Roth IRA. If you're married filing jointly, even if your spouse doesn't have earned income, we'll talk about that, they can have a Roth IRA too. So you can have your Roth and their Roth. So that's exactly what Scott does. So Scott brings his spouse, her name is Christine, he brings his spouse's Roth IRA into a deal, loans $50,000 to a self-storage operator, okay? Same type of transaction. He goes out, networks his butt off, as he says, finds a deal, negotiates it, brings it to the operator. He loans $50,000 with his wife's Roth IRA. In this instance, he charged 50% of the net operating income and 50% of the profits upon the sale. This was actually a smaller unit, more interesting transaction than the first one, and he commanded a 50% net operating income and 50% of the profits. That ended up being $80,000 and some change, call it $81,000, back into the Roth IRA tax-free with a 162% annualized cash-on-cash return. So that is what we refer to as an equity participation loan. Everybody with me on that? Okay. Now, this example here isn't a loan, but it's just an agreement, an equity participation agreement. Ken put $6,000 and some change into a deal. He partnered with a financial friend on a vacant lot. They held that vacant lot for about 2 years, and then they sold the property, and they split the profits 20-80. 20% of the profits went back to Ken's Roth IRA, and 80% went back to his financial friend. His profit percentage, or his split amount, was $47,000 and some change. This was a three-page document, just referred to as an equity participation agreement. So I did want to make sure I share with you that it doesn't necessarily always have to be a loan secured by property. It could be, in this case, an equity participation agreement. Think of it like a joint venture agreement. Different, just slightly different instrument than what investor A and investor B used, but the concepts are really the same. What about wrap lending? Some people know this gentleman. Who knows Bob? It's Bob, okay. So Bob and I did a training not too long ago. I'll give Bob all the credit for it. He's the one that did the actual presentation. And what Bob does routinely is he does these wrap loan deals. So it looked like there were quite a few people that raised their hand. Who has not done a wrap loan before? Okay, so quite a few people. All right, good. So what is a wrap loan? Well, there's a number of documents involved, okay, but you'll find that it's actually pretty simple. So one of the things I did to learn about this is I started looking at documents. And then I looked at some of Ed's documents, and I was like, wow, this is actually very, very simple. This is not overly complex, right? But there are a few documents that you got to make sure you get in order. And there are attorneys that work in this network that can help you with this. There are people within this network that can help you with this, okay? So here's the premise of a wrap loan. I have a small amount of money in my IRA, or HSA, or CISA. In this case, Bob, it's his wife's HSA. And I have a deal, where I can make a loan to an investor. So you got to have some financial friends in play here. I can make a loan to an investor to, let's say, flip a house. And what I can do is I can bring in a money partner that's going to fund a majority of the loan, and I only put a little bit of money in with my HSA, Roth IRA, CISA, plug and play the account type you want to use. But the interest income that I generate, the interest that I command on that deal, is going to be made up of not just my small amount of money, but it's going to be made up of my small amount of money and the much larger money that's coming from the financial friend. So I hate to use this word because I know an attorney would scold me for it, but you're leveraging someone else's money without it being a loan to your IRA. It's actually you partnering with another investor, if you will, to make a loan to someone to, let's say, flip a house. And it doesn't have to be a house flip. It could be like a BRRRR deal. It could be even a longer-term deal. But a lot of times we see these are in-and-out transactions. They're for fix-and-flip transactions. All right, so that's the premises of it, okay? Your small amount of money is going to generate interest on a much larger amount of money. So Bob finds an opportunity, a borrower that needs $60,000. Borrower needs $60,000. Borrower's name is Paul. So Bob has his wife's HSA, health savings account, with $6,000. The borrower agrees to pay 15% interest and 5 points. Doesn't have to be 15% and 5 points, right? It could be less. It could be 12% and 2 points, 12% and 3 points. I've seen all different figures across the board, but this is Bob's deal. So Bob is able to command 15% and 5 points. Bob is the one that's negotiating the whole deal, right? That's the key. Bob has the deal. But Bob only has $6,000 in the HSA. He needs $54,000 more. Now, quick fact check on everybody. Do you think Bob personally could bring the $54,000 into this deal? Yes. He could, but if he did that, then the HSA would get a much larger percentage of the profits, right? Much smaller percentage of the profits. Because Bob is what to his wife's HSA? A disqualified person. This only works with a financial friend. Only works with a financial friend. Just wanted to make sure we're very clear on that. So now comes along Bob's neighbor. We have that somewhere on here. Bob's neighbor comes along, and Bob's neighbor is a financial friend, not a disqualified person. So what Bob is able to do is he's able to use the $54,000 from his neighbor to finance the $60,000 purchase via a wrap loan. So here's what it looks like. He's got his wife's HSA with $6,000 in it, and then he has his neighbor's $54,000 for the total $60,000. They call this $54,000 the underlying mortgage. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ed. Am I using the right term? Underlying mortgage. The $54,000 is the underlying mortgage. He has his wife Amy's HSA at $6,000. Now, the loan is originated at 15% and 5 points. M&T is getting 10%. but the loan is charging 15%. You're going to see that Amy's HSA is actually going to receive the interest, not just from her $6,000, but from the entire $60,000. That's a key principle to this transaction working and being very beneficial for the HSA in growing a small account in a very rapid way. Amy's HSA receives the 5 points and the spread of 10 and 15%, which is 5%. So I know there's a number of details there, but bear with me. Here's how the numbers work out. There's a lot of detail here. The neighbor puts in $54,000, has $1,080 in points, $2,700 and some change in interest, for a total amount of $3,834. So the neighbor's return in 6 months is 7.1%, and if we annualize that, that's nearly 15%. So the neighbor's happy because they just took money that was making 0% interest and is now making 7.1% interest. Even if you compare that to a bank CD right now, right? Isn't that better? Would you all agree? Right. Amy's HSA puts $6,000 in, has $300 in points, about $6,200 in interest, $1,620 in points that actually came from the neighbor's money, right? Because the HSA is taking advantage of that underlying mortgage. $695 in internal fees for a total of $4,368.14. So that's a 73% return in 6 months, nearly 200% annualized. Just on a numbers basis, $6,000 with the HSA making a $4,300 profit. And how much is he going to pay in taxes on that profit? 0%. Now, had he done this deal with non-IRA money, which by all means you could do, right? And I see some people will do that at times. If you're doing it with non-IRA money, you would pay interest income tax, right? Interest income is subject to what tax rate? Your ordinary income tax rate. So he could have paid nearly $1,000, maybe even more, in taxes on that profit. But because he did it in the HSA, it's tax-free. And then he can use that HSA for what? Healthcare, another deal, of course. Healthcare-related expenses and not pay tax. Now, maybe you're somebody out there that wants to make some money now doing deals like this, right? Why couldn't you go to a financial friend that has an IRA or 401k or other retirement plan that's not happy with the stock market, not happy with what they're doing now, their money's earning little to no interest, they don't want to put it in a bank CD? Couldn't you leverage somebody else's money and actually make some profit for yourself in the here and now? Yeah. Could you do both? Could you do some deals with your IRA and then do some deals outside of your IRA so you can enjoy the fruits of your labor now instead of having to wait till you're 59 and a half? Why not? Now, how do you get access to all of these documentation if you're interested? All right, I want to make sure I help you with that. I don't want to just leave you with the content. So we did build a online module, and we call it our self-directed IRA Wealth Accelerator course. And if you are someone that's interested in opening an account, please let my team know, because you will receive a free copy of this course. Who already has an account with Equity Trust and, you know, is maybe interested in this but not interested in opening an additional account because you're already maxing out everything, okay? If that's the case, if you're not looking to open an additional account, just let us know. We'll help you get access to this, okay? It's not a problem at all. This is not a course, a moneymaker for us, okay? This is simply a course that we offer to folks when they're establishing accounts so that they can take advantage of utilizing the material. And in this course, we actually have all of the sample documents that I showed you. Now, let me make sure I'm very clear in that I'm providing you the sample documents so that you have the concepts down, but you want to make sure that you take those documents and you go to an attorney and you have an attorney in your local area draft the appropriate documents for the deal, okay? I can't give you legal advice. I'm giving you copies of the sample documents so you can use those as reference material so that you don't have to start on the 0-yard line. I want to help you start at the 95-yard line, all right? And then you can get it over the hump with an attorney in your local area to help you draft these documents. I also, in this course, I just recorded a brand new introductory training module that actually walks you through a lot of the examples that I already walked you through, okay? So if you're like, wow, he went fast, there was a lot of material there, I have it duplicated here for you, all right, along with all of each of the sample documents that are in there. All right, so if you're somebody that is interested in opening an account, please come see us. Our IRA counselors that are here, Ken and Owen, they gave everybody, or everybody should have, a copy of the account application. I would just ask you to fill that out at some point this weekend and hand that back to either Ken or Owen at the table. They will help you through the process of establishing your self-directed IRA. All right, all you need to do is fill out section 1 of that application. So your name, your date of birth, your address, that type of information. And then come by our table at the very front of the venue here, and Owen and Ken will sit down with you and they will walk you through the account open process. Now, you're going to want to fund your account at some point over the next couple weeks. And so we'll help you with that as well, of course. Don't feel like you're on your own to transfer or roll over funds from point A to point B. Now, maybe you're somebody that has already an existing 401k or 403b or other employer plan, so you'd be doing a rollover to the self-directed IRA, and we'll help you with that process. If you have an existing IRA, you can transfer an existing IRA to Equity Trust. You don't have to move your entire account. You can move just a portion if you want to. You can make your contribution out of pocket. So every year, as long as you have earned income, you can make a contribution. And then, of course, there's the Roth conversion, which is converting existing tax-deferred funds into a Roth account, and we can help you with that. If you do choose to open an account, submit your documentation to get the ball rolling this weekend, we will waive your $50 setup fee, and there is an opportunity for us to also waive your maintenance fee for 2023. So you will only pay a 2024 annual maintenance fee to get your account set up and running. All right, so we want to make sure that that's an easy process for you and you can have your account up and running with no setup fee or maintenance fee. You just have to pay the 2024 annual maintenance fee, and we can provide to you what that fee looks like depending on the balance of your account that you're moving over. I will tell you, if you're opening a new Roth IRA or HSA and you're making a one-time contribution, your first contribution to get that account going, it's only a $225 maintenance fee. All right. Now, Roth IRA, let me give you a few important components of the Roth IRA to take away and how much you can contribute to these accounts. So with a Roth IRA for 2023, you can contribute $6,500 when you're under the age of 50. And then when you're 50 and over, the government gives you a $1,000 catch-up, which brings you to $7,500, $7,500 to a Roth IRA. All right? Now, there are, and I know this is hard to read, there are what are called modified adjusted gross income limits. So let me flip to this slide because I have it broken out much larger for you. I just like to show you what it looks like from the IRS. Doesn't everyone love reading? By the way, the IRS website is, I love the IRS website, okay? I do. It actually, they've done some amazing things with it. It's actually very helpful. And I'm not, there's no sarcasm in there, I'm telling you, okay? All right. I was trying to land a joke there again, and that was one of those. We're getting to the end here. All right, this is the way it works with a Roth IRA. There are what are called modified adjusted gross income limits, MAGI limits for short. Not MAGA, okay, this is MAGI. That was one of those jokes too. MAGI limits, okay, modified adjusted gross income. For all intents and purposes, your adjusted gross income is your MAGI, okay? If you're not sure, talk to your CPA or tax accountant. They can tell you whether you're over or under. The way it works is if you're single and you make between 138 and 153, you can only do a partial contribution to a Roth IRA. They call that the phase-out range, where as you get closer to 153, you can only put a small amount of money in there. If you're over 153, you can't contribute at all. Then if you're married filing jointly and you're between 218 and 228, you can only contribute a small amount of that full $6,500 or $7,500. And then when you're over 228, can't contribute at all. Now, the good news is, I mentioned it before, there's what's called a backdoor Roth contribution. Backdoor Roth contribution. So if you don't know, write this down, backdoor Roth contribution. It didn't come about until 2010. Prior to 2010, you actually couldn't do this. You weren't allowed to do it. If you made over $100,000 prior to 2010, you were not allowed to convert a single dime of tax-deferred money into a Roth, which was unfortunate. But they lifted that in 2010 because the government recognized that they could actually generate tax revenues by allowing wealthy people to convert from their tax-deferred accounts into the Roth. Now, it kicks the can down the road, but it generates some revenue for them now, which, if you couldn't tell, the government kind of needs some revenue right now with, you know, over 30-some trillion. And was that one of those bad, dark jokes? Yeah, I know. Sorry. My apologies. So ultimately, it's just important to understand that if you make too much money, you can qualify for a contribution. You just might have to go about it a little bit different way. And that's through the backdoor Roth contribution. So at the end of the day, operationally or procedurally, what do you have to do? You first open a traditional IRA. You put the money in, your $6,500 or $7,500, and then you immediately convert over to the Roth IRA. You're not being double taxed. You're just putting the money in the traditional, recognizing a temporary deduction, and then immediately converting it over to the Roth, and your net effect is after-tax dollars. Can children have Roth IRAs? Yes. Children can have Roth IRAs. If they're old enough to work in your business, you can pay them, and then that's the earned income to support the contribution, right? If they're young, does anyone have any ideas of how you could get income for a very, very young child? Modeling, right. Get with your CPA. They can help you through that process. You can pay them as a model, put them in your marketing literature, right? And then from there, you can contribute to their Roth IRAs. Now, the backdoor Roth, again, traditional, going into the traditional, convert to the Roth. Just remember that. You just open two accounts. You open a traditional and a Roth. You're not paying for both accounts, by the way. So if you're in these circumstances and you're going to open a Roth IRA over the next couple days, you just want to make sure you tell your IRA counselor and they will open a traditional IRA for you, and then you'll put the money in there and then you'll immediately move it over to the Roth IRA. And I should mention that if you are going to open one of these accounts over the next couple days, you're likely not going to fund the account, right? That's going to happen next week. So once you're account is open, you're going to be assigned an onboarding specialist. So you'll be part of what we call our private client group. You will get a single point of contact onboarding specialist. That is a team of individuals that I oversee. And that is a team of individuals that's going to work with you one-on-one to walk you through the funding of your account as well as your first investments that you make. So we actually have a dedicated team that's going to walk you through your first investments that you're making with your account so you feel comfortable with the process. All right, now let's recap the contributions. Much bigger for you now, $6,500 under 50, $7,500 when 50 and over. But we're getting pretty close to the end of the year, right? Next year, this is super exciting, riveting information that I'm about to deliver to you guys at the very end here, okay? The federal government, thank the federal government, they recognized that there's this interesting thing out there that's happening, this phenomenon called inflation. And so they're letting us put more money into our IRAs and 401ks next year. Yay, $500. That's better than no dollars, right? Yay! So we're going to be able to put, if you're under 50, $7,000. And then when you're 50 and over, that's going to be $8,000. Oh, I'm sorry, $7,500. So you're going to be able to do, you're going to be $8,000, yeah. You're going to be able to do $8,000, so $7,000. If you're under 50, $8,000 if you're 50 and over. Okay? Everybody really excited about that? Yeah, right? But think about it. So if you have a spouse who has a spouse, okay, are you going to stay married? Okay. Prerequisite number one. If you don't have earned income, but your spouse does, or vice versa, that's okay. Right? Because only one out of the two, as long as you're married filing jointly, has to have earned income to support the other spouse's contribution. So both of you can have your contributions going into your separate IRAs. They have to be separate IRAs. And so now, if you're a couple under 50, you're getting $13,000 in. And if you're 50 and over, you're getting $15,000, right? Then at the turn of the year, you dump in your 2024 contribution. So now you could potentially get upwards of $30,000 over the next 2 months into an IRA. Is over $30,000 going to help you go out and do the types of deals that you want to do, especially the types of deals that we're talking about here? Wrap loans, joint ventures, using the financial friend formula, right? The financial friend formula. So keep that in mind. Remember the back door, really, really important. Remember that you have an opportunity here to make contributions for this year and then next year over the course of about 2 months or so. Last but not least, who has tax-deferred funds, traditional IRA, SEP IRA, other tax-deferred funds? You can convert those funds from your traditional IRA into a Roth IRA. So you can go from tax-deferred into tax-free Roth. Now, you got to pay the taxes now, right? You got to pay the taxes when you convert money over. And it's based on the amount that you convert over. So let's say you convert $100,000 from your traditional to your Roth. $100,000 is going to be added to your ordinary income, and then you're going to pay taxes accordingly. So let's say you're at a 20% effective tax rate. 20% of $100,000 is what? $20,000. So you're going to pay $20,000 in taxes to get that $100,000 over into a Roth. That's what we call a Roth conversion. Now, do you have to convert all of your money? No. And think about it. We're in an interesting period of time for you to start doing some tax planning. You can convert some money now and then some money at the turn of the year, and you've effectively spread your tax burden out over 2 years, right? And think about it. January 2nd, you convert a little bit more money over. When do you have to pay the tax bill for that? April 15th of 2025, right? So you got 15 months, right, to pay that tax bill. So we're in an interesting period of time for you to be thinking about maxing out your contributions, and then if you want, the conversions. Also, all throughout the program, we've been talking about these small dollar deals, right? $8,000 was ALEC, right? $8,000 was that deal. Investor A and investor B. How much did investor A put in the deal? $13,000 and some change. Bob's HSA had what in the deal? $6,000. So if you have a tax-deferred account now and you know that you have an opportunity to do one of these smaller dollar deals, maybe you convert $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000 into the Roth, right? Pay taxes on that smaller amount, and then when you make your tax-free outsized profit return, that goes back into your Roth IRA tax-free. In fact, Scott, who I showed you before, who does those self-storage deals, he did a real estate option deal. So he put a property, put an option on a property, a self-storage building. He converted $2,000 from his traditional to his Roth, paid taxes on $2,000, sold the option to an investor buyer to take down the deal, made $20,000 tax-free in his Roth IRA. Would you rather pay taxes on the $2,000 or the $20,000? So at the very end here and in conclusion, those are some tips and strategies that you can think about between now and going forward. That is the traditional Roth conversion, where you're just taking tax-deferred money and converting it into the Roth. Different, but in the same family as the back door. The back door is when you don't qualify for a direct contribution to a Roth IRA, so you first contribute to the traditional, and then you immediately convert over to the Roth. All right, so we have about 6 minutes here in recap, okay? The financial friend formula. The financial friend formula requires the account, right? Requires the deal or opportunity, and then requires what? The financial friend. Good. If you are looking to open an account again, just make sure you get with Ken or Owen, one of our IRA counselors, and they will help you through that process. If you're opening an account between now and tomorrow, you're starting the process. Understandably, you may not fund the account just yet, but you start the process. You have no setup fee, and you have no maintenance fee for 2023. You just pay your 2024 annual maintenance fee. And then lastly, when you're setting up the account, you will receive our digital online self-directed IRA small dollar wealth accelerator course that has the video modules, the training. I also uploaded the video that Bob does where he breaks down that entire transaction for you. You're also going to hear from a couple by the name of Chuck and Gina who they buy houses on owner financing with their self-directed IRAs and they pay the UBIT tax and they break down how they structure that. So you're getting over 10 hours of video training in that course. You're getting all the sample documents in that as well. And again, if you're somebody that maybe already has your accounts up and running with Equity Trust and you're maxing out your contributions and you're moving in the right direction, just come see us at the exhibit booth outside and we'll help you get a copy of that. All right, so that being said, one last thing that I want to mention. A lot of people don't know this about Equity Trust Company. It's a more recent development. But Equity Trust Company, through a recent acquisition that we're really excited about, we are now offering 1031 exchange services. Has anyone done a 1031 exchange before? Okay, does anyone want to do a 1031 exchange? Does anyone not have a clue what I'm talking about? Okay, that's fine too. So I'm really excited about this. Through a recent acquisition, this company, their name was Midland. They're now Equity Trust. And they've actually been doing 1031 exchanges for 25 years. And the representative, the president of this 1031 exchange division, which is now Equity Trust, so we're really excited to offer this service now in addition to self-directed IRAs. And it only made sense, right? We're showing people how to create tax-deferred and tax-free profits. Why not add this in as we work with lots of real estate investors? And so through this acquisition, the president of the Midland, now Equity Trust of our 1031 exchange, is actually here with us today. Her name is Teresa Knower. I like to call her Teresa Knows Everything About 1031 Exchanges Knower. Just turn around for a moment and say hi to Teresa. Hi, Teresa. So Teresa is a very valuable resource. She's going to be here over the next couple days. Come see her. She'll be at our exhibit booth out there. She's actually been doing this for 18 years, and she's the president of the 1031 Exchange Division. So she just knows a ton about 1031 Exchange. She's here to be a resource for you. If you want to do a 1031 Exchange, she can talk to you about that as well. So with that being said, did you guys get a lot out of this session? Yeah? Okay, awesome. Yes, Kent. Has everyone met Kent Kinzer before? You guys know Kent? Great guy. So he does a phenomenal job, and I'm very soon going to be the beneficiary of his Roth IRA, right? We do have our gold membership. I appreciate that, Connie, and I would say not dumb at all. These are transactions and tactics, right, that most people aren't doing. There's not a lot of information out there, so let Equity Trust help work you through the process and really be your quarterback. That's what we do for you. Really appreciate that. I know we got to run, so everybody, thank you so much for the time today, and best of luck to you out there.